Another potential All-Star is headed to the injury list, but the Diamondbacks keep grinding out results. Do they have what it takes to make the postseason? All this and more coming up right now on the T-Backs podcast.
Perdomo makes the play.
And a high fly ball. No doubt about this. Home run Marte.
They're going to send them all the way around. Corbin Carroll with an inside the park answer back.
I'm Ivan Melendez.
I'm Luis Gonzalez.
I'm Torrey Lovello, and you're listening to the T-Backs podcast.
T-Backs podcast.
T-Backs podcast.
Arizona's number one baseball and beverage podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the T-Backs podcast, where we bring you all the hottest Arizona Diamondbacks tea and talk from across the pond here in London. We're proud to be Arizona's number one baseball and beverage podcast. I'm sitting here today after the last of six crucial games back-to-back facing two of the historically worst teams in baseball in the 2025 Colorado Rockies and the Chicago White Sox, whose record is set to be broken this year by those Rockies after an abysmal season last year in the Windy City. These were must-win series for sure, and we've achieved that, and they were a good chance at some 100% sweeps to claw back some division ranking, which we haven't achieved. But after losing the series on the road in Toronto, I definitely was calling these ones must-win games. We should have learned our lesson last year after missing out on the playoffs by one game, and that lesson is every single game counts. So what happened? Well, I've got my cup of tea here, and we're ready to get you caught up on everything that's happened in and out and around the Diamondbacks clubhouse this week. Game 1 versus the Rockies at Coors Field was an absolute hit-and-run fest, with the Diamondbacks taking on an 8-14 victory, which is fine. I've got no problems with that. 14 runs, 21 hits, no errors. But Zach Gallen, who, by the way, has the worst ERA amongst all qualified starters in baseball this year, still managed to make the Rockies look like the NL All-Stars, giving up a disastrous 6-run fourth inning when he'd actually been fairly comfortable otherwise. I think it's just got to be chalked up to another example of the pitching staff having that, you know, weird cloud overhead and not being able to locate their pitches or get themselves in any kind of comfortable rhythm. It was said online earlier this week that the worse Gallen gets, the more he's going to have to consider accepting a qualifying offer with a club option at the end of the year. And I think that, yeah, that's more and more pretty likely if he keeps managing to have starts like that. So even when earning the W, he just can't shut teams down and get himself out of trouble. And, you know, this is the thing with the Milkman. People are talking about him as, you know, always going to command a middle to low end ace salary no matter where he goes in his free agency. I just don't think that's going to happen anymore. And the discourse on Reddit said, yeah, he's actually never had amazing stuff. He's just looked better than what he actually has for the majority of his career. And I think it's time to start thinking about, yeah, okay, this is a guy who was traded from Miami in exchange for Jazz Chisholm, who's gone on to make a World Series with the Yankees and establish himself as, you know, one of the biggest stars in baseball. You're not going to get a bigger star in baseball in return for him if you trade him, but you got to start thinking about the kind of value you could get there. We talked about it very quickly last week. We're going to mention it again towards the bottom of the show today as well. Yeah, Zach Gallen. Oof. There was a little less of that kind of disaster glass in Game 2, where aside from giving up a couple of runs in the first, Merrill Kelly kept the Rockies hitters from causing too much damage, and we got a rejuvenated-looking Ryan Thompson. Looked much better than we've seen in this year, followed by Shelby Miller in the order, who struck out the side in order to earn the save on a 5-3 win. Not exactly the most inspiring game of baseball, but hey, you know, a Diamondbacks win is a Diamondbacks win. I'm not going to try and, you know, nitpick too hard in this. We've already got enough things to complain about as a franchise, so I don't need to go and start looking at little things that are bigger than you might think they are. It took us to Game 3, however, where Brandon Fart was on the mound as part of what some people have called the power of friendship strategy, where Torrey rests big hitters and star players on Sunday travel days, and it showed as a lineup missing Ketel Marte slumped to a 4-2 loss, with all four of those runs coming from the Rockies' fifth inning after Brandon Fart had gone four scoreless and looked to be on course for a win, which is a really similar scenario to Gallen's earlier than expected collapse in Game 1. Now, my opinions of the pitching staff right now aren't exactly a secret. Most of us know that last year's pitching coach Brent Strom was the scapegoat offered in the round of changes after last year's playoff exclusion. We swapped out Tony Perez-Chica as well as one of the base coaches. And yeah, Brent Strom was discharged off, and I think he's gone up to Philadelphia now, if I'm not wrong. But yeah, the organization definitely weren't going to cut Torrey after last year. So he was, Brent Strom, the pitching coach, was one of the guys who was, you know, chopped. But his replacement, Brian Kaplan, whatever he's come in and started doing there, clearly isn't working. We'll talk about the injury situation a little later on in the show. And a lot of people saying, yeah, Brian Kaplan has to, you know, hold the hand up and say, yeah, you know what, I got to take some responsibility for all the injuries this year. But this is a guy who's managed to take what we were calling as a strong candidate for the best starting rotation in baseball at the start of the year. When you think about it in terms of what we were expecting, you know, Corbin Burnes, Zach Gallen, Merrill Kelly, Eduardo Rodriguez, Brandon Fart, like, that was looking pretty solid. And yeah, he sucked all the belief in themselves out of it, and all their, you know, big bollocks pitching clutch, tossed all of that down the drain as well. And this is before we even get to the bullpen crisis, which, you know, has been reshuffled and necessitated through injury. But we haven't seen a shade of what we'd expect from the likes of Ryan Thompson or Kevin Ginkle, who were both parts of the 7-8-9 backbone of the 2023 run to the World Series. We currently have the 27th worst bullpen ERA in baseball. And, you know, guys, something has to give. And signings like Anthony Descalfini are very much band-aids on a bombshell. Speaking of whom, however, he did earn a three-inning save as part of a combined shutout of the White Sox in Game 1 at Guaranteed Rate Field, working as part of a combination with Eduardo Rodriguez, who did earn his third win of the season with 10 Ks. If we can, you know, get the Eduardo Rodriguez that we're paying, you know, $20 million a year, $80 million total for, back for the rest of the year, that would be a huge boost. In all honesty, it was a wild kind of night. It was the kind of night where somebody like, oh, I don't know, Pavin Smith, MV Pavin, has a multi-homer game, which, as we know, we get, you know, maybe once or twice a year in the middle of random cold streaks of Pavin's bat. Last year it came against Justin Verlander at the Astros. This year, yeah, came in game one against the White Sox. It, however, wasn't a great day for the Snakes. Despite that, despite the win, we still left with a bitter taste in the mouth. As more injury news came in, we got the news Corbin Carroll was going to miss several weeks with a wrist fracture following the delay in getting him an MRI. And Eugenio Suarez and Josh Naylor exited that game as well. So the bad news just kept coming. And here's the thing. These MRIs keep coming back negative in some cases and missing stuff. And for those 2 or 3 days after Corbin Carroll got hit in the wrist, he was actually available to pinch hit despite being rested out of the lineup. When, like, if there's even the possibility of, you know, a bone not being attached to another bit of bone where it's supposed to be, which, you know, is the basic definition of what a wrist fracture is, why on earth are these guys not, you know, absolutely wrapped up in hockey pads and ice packs? Like, just bundle them off to the hospital. We can't be taking chances with somebody, especially with, like, Corbin Carroll, who is going to be the backbone of this franchise for the foreseeable future. Why, oh, why, oh, why are we... Actually, no, we'll see how it gets. But, yeah, we'll keep him in the clubhouse and have him ready to hit if we need him. That's just screams about horrendous mismanagement in how we're handling the injury protocol, especially with, you know, previous MRIs coming back negative with other players, and yet they were still injured. So, you know, just get an MRI, get a second opinion, rush that crap. You know, it's just not good enough. And that vibe kind of stuck around. Game 2 had much of a similar feel to Game 1. So despite what's been described as a gritty win, it really was those bad vibes that define the narrative. That sort of began with Ketel Marte leaving the field on the verge of tears after a White Sox fan yelled something about his mum, who you may or may not know, you probably do by now, lost their life tragically in a car crash in 2017. So, you know, it goes without saying that's a disgusting thing to do. The relevant fan was ejected, and late and earlier today it was confirmed that, yeah, a lifetime ban of all MLB stadiums is headed their way. But the Diamondbacks dispatch are organizing people to wear pink or other bright colors for the next homestead in support of our second baseman and in memory of his mum. So if you're back in Arizona coming to that game on Friday, you guys know what you got to do. On that note, following the bad vibes, we had more bad vibes as another injury from a hit-by-pitch with Ildemar Vargas, who had been the replacement for Eugenio Suarez coming in the game previously, took one badly in the foot, exiting with what we now know to be a fractured fifth metatarsal, sending him to the injury list. Tim Tower, as usual for the ultimate utility guy, dropped straight in, did a good job, But seriously, the Snakes have now endured a season's worth of bad injuries in just under 4 weeks. When will it end? That pitch that got Ildamaro was honestly really bad. Like, he's standing in the box, got his kind of usual little stance with his foot placement. He's a little open, torso a little bit towards the mound. And the bum White Sox pitcher hits him square in, like, the outside of his front foot, which is, at the very least, a meter outside of the strike zone. Like, I know, yeah, it's the White Sox. They suck. They have no good pitching. But how on earth do you suck that badly? And how on earth is the Diamondbacks' luck that bad? Like, hey, you know, they're throwing like it's a Dodgers-Padres game, and they're just hitting everybody. Like, come on, guys. Diamondbacks. You know, we're the good vibes team. We have the friendly clubhouse. Why are people throwing at us? Doesn't make any sense. But, you know, I'm going to force myself to get this phrase out, and I say it every week. A win is a win. And if you want some more positives, the return of Raking Jake McCarthy in the outfield, was crowned with a stunning home run robbery out there, as he was the replacement for Corbin Carroll in that position. So it's great to see Jake back, and he's got some great vibes going on with Alec Thomas in center. Although you, of course, do wish it were in better circumstances. Following that mention of oatmeal, I think it's probably time we have a little bit of a tea break. On to game three, which began with the news that while Josh Naylor was okay-ish and, you know, he made the starting lineup, Ildamaro Vargas was headed to the IL, and he was going to be replaced on the roster by Blaze Alexander. Good to see Blaze back. You know, he's a guy who's been working on a lot and was unfortunate to have missed out in spring training. Like, there was talks, would he be one of the guys moved to center field? Same talk with John Lawler. There were so many good, like, utility infield guys all fighting for what was probably just the one spot on that roster. So between Vargas, Lawler, Garrett Hampson, who eventually got the call, and, you know, somebody like Trey Mancini, who can play first, and, you know, if Naylor had been not okay, I reckon it would have been Mancini that would have got the call there too. Like, he's been absolutely raking in Reno. Yeah, it was Blaze Alexander who's finally got a chance to make an impression this year. And we were also getting our first look at James McCann behind the dish, which was really interesting because Zach Gallen's starts are almost always with Jose Herrera at catcher due to, you know, the relationship that those guys have and the style that Zach Gallen has said he likes in calling his own games and having Jose be a good catcher for that sort of thing. So I think a lot of people were hoping that, you know, maybe McCann would be the kind to draw some more of the old Zach Gallen milkman that we're used to seeing out. And yeah, I was with them in that. And yeah, we again set ourselves up for disappointment. Regardless of who was behind the plate, it didn't do much to ease the usual style of Gallen starts in 2025. He surrendered the Diamondbacks' early lead by giving up 6 hits, 2 homers, and 4 earned runs in his innings. His past 2 starts against the Rockies and the White Sox have a combined final line of 10.1 innings pitched, 18 hits, 12 runs, 12 earned, 2 BBs, 7 Ks, and 4 home runs. Any other year and any other pitcher in any other team, he'd be sent to AAA to sort himself out because of how badly he's sucking, but he's being kept in this order purely on the fact that he's a starting pitcher and he's healthy and he doesn't have a bum elbow. This was his 11th start of the year, allowing 4 earned runs. He started 17 games and is simply not good enough. In this case, I will borrow from, and, you know, I hate to do this as a Portsmouth and Tottenham supporter, but I'll borrow from Arsenal Fan TV over in the UK here. Famous quote, "It's time to go." I would rather go and get, you know, a couple of young arms in a trade, like Caden Dana, who I mentioned on the show last week, or Jackson Ferris over in Los Angeles, blood them as much as possible now because they would genuinely struggle to be much worse than this, regardless of how inexperienced they are. You know, heck, get, you know, somebody like Heung-Min Lin, who I know has struggled since his return from military service in AAA this year. He had made some gains in terms of command and control last year in since being elevated to AAA, and that doesn't seem to have quite returned in the same way this year. But, you know, I can't see anybody being, you know, too much worse than this. You know, this is, and this, these rankings have been updated this past hour, but he's the second to last worst ERA amongst all qualifying starting pitchers now. And yeah, what on earth is happening there? I genuinely am struggling to figure out what on earth has happened to Zach Gallen, because, you know, this is a man who was our ace due to a paperwork error at the start of the year, still got the opening day start, trying to, you know, maybe Torres trying to win those brownie points there, or maybe it was a legitimate thing where we messed up Corbin Burns' scheduling. Either way, we gave Zach Gallen probably everything we could have offered him at the start of this year to say, yeah, you know, you're still the ace. We're expecting you to show up and perform like an ace. And he has been abysmal compared to what we've come to expect from the Milkman. And as the first Diamondbacks player I ever had, you know, the opportunity to do with, like a meet and greet in person with, super nice guy, no hate for him whatsoever. He was very friendly. Had a amazed reaction when he found out that I had traveled from South London all the way to Fry's in Central Phoenix to meet him, which, you know, is a very interesting story in and of its own. Let me know if anybody wants to buy the movie rights to that. But no shade to the guy. It's time to move on. And, you know, it might be time to move on to, you know, somewhere like, you know, the NPB in Japan or Korea or something, because I really am struggling to see how he might come back from this reputation of just being so disappointing this year. And, you know, that's not saying that, you know, the Korean or Japanese leagues are terrible. Like, you saw somebody like Trevor Bauer go on and say, yeah, he was going to compete for the equivalent of the Cy Young Award last year in Japan. And this season he's getting absolutely blown up, worse than Gallen is. So, yeah, maybe don't go to Japan, Zach. But, you know, I really wish him well wherever he ends up. But he's got to be somebody that we've got to think, okay, can we trade him for, you know, two young pitchers who maybe we're not expecting to be our ace, but could be, you know, solid three or fourth in the rotation guys, because we just don't have the pitching arms to go through right now. Right, like Ryan Nelson's finally looking back to what we'd hoped he could be, but, you know, we've lost Tommy Henry to the injury list alongside Corbin Burns, so that's, you know, two guys who probably would have been expected to start games at some point in the year. Like, Burns was expected to maybe be the new ace. Tommy Henry had a very much an outside shot at being a starter. I don't think many people are expecting to see much of Yelber Diaz at the moment, although I wouldn't object to that. So, yeah, well, there are options for who could come up and take a spot in rotation if we trade him for somebody who isn't a starting pitcher. But, yeah, either way, Zach Gallen, I'm sorry. I genuinely think your time as a D-back is very much up. So, with a combined injury list of Corbin Carroll, Ildemar Vargas, Eugenio Suarez, Gabby Moreno, Adrian Del Castillo as the position players, and then Jeff Brigham, Dre Jameson, Christian Mayner, Kendall Graveman, Corbin Burns, AJ Puck, Justin Martinez, Tommy Henry, Jordan Montgomery, Blake Wolfson, and Christian Montes de Oca for the pitchers. Yeah, we have every right to moan and groan about the Diamondbacks injury list with, you know, bad luck. Got to ask questions, is there some mismanagement happening to make the situation seemingly so much worse than anything we've seen before? It's an epidemic through baseball of pitchers' elbows blowing up all the time, but why are pitchers so keen to throw at our guys like every day is Dodgers versus Padres? I pondered these questions for a little while, and ultimately I decided that while, yes, I think we do need to overhaul several staff departments, probably at the end of the year, because they're not going to destabilize things in the middle of the year, but definitely we need to look at how to help our players get the kind of physical conditioning that prevents this sort of injury crisis in the future, as well as possibly begging Brent Strom on our hands and knees to come back, because I cannot see Kaplan keeping his job. There's other alternatives available there too. We could attempt to lure somebody like Carl Willis and Brad Goldberg from the Cleveland with the promise of sunnier skies and a reunion with Josh Naylor. These, don't forget, are the guys who've turned Slade Ciccone, who was the other side of that Josh Naylor trade, into a sub-3 ERA starter this year, which sounds to me like exactly the kind of development our younger arms like Brandon Fart, Yelber Diaz, Yumin Lin, and Dylan Rae could benefit from. But on the question of teams having the worst hit injury record for a year ever, and while I think we're pretty close to that right now, some research has turned up some pretty bad historical years. So here's a bit on for you baseball history nerds. The 1982 Milwaukee Brewers lost out on a World Series by most people's accounts after star closer Rolly Fingers sustained an elbow injury, and they were a common answer for, you know, the worst injury year for a baseball team. But, you know, some teams still managed to find success in the face of injury horror. The 2019 Yankees won over 100 games while supposedly sustaining the most injuries in a season in MLB history, And that year's contributions by Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton are hard to beat. But that team relied on understudy names like the likes of Gio Urshela, Mike Tauchman, Luke Voigt, Mike Ford, DJ LeMahieu, Kyle Higashioka, Gleyber Torres. And that's not exactly the kind of untested gambles that the Diamondbacks are going to have to field this year. That Yankees reserve lineup that year was probably just as good as, you know, a middle-of-the-road team like Detroit or somebody like that, where it's like, yeah, Gleyber Torres doing well, but who else do they have? Things like that kind of put things into perspective. So after the flop that was Jordan Lawler in the majors this year, the backup infielder option right now is Tim Tower and Blaze Alexander, and they'll have to play everywhere. And these are guys who, you know, made their debut in the show this year or last year. And yeah, we've now lost Ildemar Vargas, who, while experienced, lost out to Garrett Hampson at the start of the year, who was since DFA'd, was then terrorizing Cincinnati's platoon of outfielders again, got DFA'd again, and is now at St. Louis. So shout out to secret agent Garrett Hampson, who, if he manages to torpedo the Cardinals and take them out of the race, will be absolutely doing the Diamondbacks a favor. Now, with veteran catcher and 2019 All-Star James McCann arriving, follow Moreno and Del Castillo's injuries and Aramis Garcia being DFA'd, it's sort of telling you the kind of caliber of free agents, waiver claims, and desperate touches that we're relying on here. The front office refuses to call this a rebuild year and has committed to being buyers at the deadline, and I still think this Diamondbacks team is in with an outside shot, regardless of anything else that's happening. I'm, you know, optimistic and blind to any kind of failure, almost to a fault, and, you know, I think that comes from, you know, supporting a terrible football team for most of my teenage years. So yeah, I'm used to teams that are rubbish but still hoping that they can do something, and this is before we get into the fact that my football team had multiple points deductions for not having any money several times in a row with back-to-back relegations. And I can explain relegations in my Twitter mentions later to all you Americans who aren't quite sure what that is in sports. But back to the Diamondbacks, without any real key assets to trade, given how much value Zach Gallen must have lost, it doesn't seem like we're going to be getting very much bang for our buck back in any kind of trade. However you slice it, 4 games out of 6 isn't bad, but we had a real chance for a 100% record in those last two series with back-to-back sweeps was really a possibility. And you have to consider that those two games as two losses dropped in the division. Our fixtures coming up aren't exactly easy. Like the Marlins, yeah, I can see us winning that and I'd like to just go for the sweep. But then we have the Giants arriving for 4 games, followed by the Royals, followed by a road trip to the Padres. That's not exactly like an easy run. All things considered, the easy run's just finished, and we managed to somehow lose 2 games that realistically the team didn't look